An inflection point is something that can have a seismic impact, what we call a 10x impact, on the business model as you know it today. When we sit back and look at what we're dealing with COVID-19, I would say we are at an inflection point right now.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope away from meaningless toil and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. On this episode, we revisit CEO and founder of Pivoting Strategies, Carla Fleming. Carla first appeared on the Tightrope Podcast back in 2018. We turn to Carla because she has teleworked for half of her career. And over that time, she developed and perfected time management hacks that render the remote workday both productive and successful. As a management consultant who studies market trends and business best practices, Carla says that the COVID-19 coronavirus has brought us to an inflection point that will permanently change how we work. We spoke with Carla Fleming earlier this week by way of Skype. So welcome back to the Tightrope, Carla Fleming.
Hey, Dan, it's great to be back.
It's great to connect with you from a social distance. I wish it were closer.
I know, but hey, we're practicing what everybody else is practicing, so this should be fun.
It should be, and it will. So on this podcast, we talk about the future of work, and through your company, Pivoting Strategies, you have become an expert of sorts on future of work issues, and especially working remotely. And I want to know from your informed standpoint how you think work is changing as a result of COVID-19 and social distancing.
No, I think it's changing a lot. Really, I would say there are three ways it's changing. It's changing the way we work and educate. Instead of going into the office now, everybody's learning how to work remotely. I think it's something that entrepreneurs who have startup businesses have figured out, because the cost of technology has come down to such a point that you can look like a big company, operate the same way as a big company in a remote environment. You can find a lot of the same tools that you might have had, whether it was email, whether it was storage for, you know, your files, or finding an accounting solution that's affordable but it is in the cloud. So it's given you a window into what an entrepreneur has to think about, everything from the technology to the bandwidth to, well, what kind of computer and do I have, you know, the appropriate technology? And it's quite affordable. I think from an education standpoint, I empathize with the parents. I sympathize with the parents that are dealing with this, because now they're multitasking in a totally different way. You may have been multitasking at work, where you might have been on a call, you might have been answering email or responding to somebody on Slack or instant messaging. And now you've got this additional component, whether it's you and a spouse sharing a computer and somebody has to share time, kind of like when we, you know, back in the 60s when we didn't have enough high schools or whatever, people kind of time shifted, meaning some folks would go to school in the morning from, you know, maybe 8 to 1, and then the rest of the students would go to school from, you know, 1 to 5. Well, we're back in a way to figuring out how to manage our time smartly. So I think a lot of the folks that have kids at home, the priority will be, yeah, I need to work, but you're going to have to time shift to address how you do that. Meaning you may work in the morning, get up early instead of having a commute and all that. In the morning, you may go do your workout and come back, do some work. Then the kids need to be online for school, say 8:30. So maybe between then and say noon, You're working with the kids to get them on board. If their teacher isn't engaged, you've got to figure out how to get them to, in a way, become very disciplined about sitting down, just like you as the adult do, to get work done. So I think that's huge. And just trying to find resources to help parents, because now you are the teacher, not necessarily the teacher in the classroom, and now you have to teach. So you know where your strengths are and you know what your weaknesses are. How do you find the resources to do that? I think the second thing that's really challenging with COVID-19 is mental health. That's a big one. I feel like folks are struggling to figure out, how do I make this thing work, meaning working from home. But then depending on the size of your house, you may be very close to each other, so it's hard to find a way to get work done. In other cases, you're distance. But the thing is, you're used to having a routine, and that routine is disrupted. So now you have to create a new routine, somewhat similar to what you had, somewhat different because of the environment you're in. And then it's like, well, how do I, if you're an extrovert, or even if you're an introvert, you still want to talk to people. Now, how do you talk to people? And then the third thing I would say is companies are now having to have a remote working strategy where they didn't necessarily have to before. So I'll give you an example. Just did some research looking at how people are thinking about remote, and Gartner is getting a lot of calls from companies saying, how do I do this remote thing? And what Gartner is finding is that 1/3 of folks kind of sort of had some capability out there for working remote, and 1/3 had no remote plan.
I'm sure.
So think of it this way. 2/3 of companies, based on what Gartner's seeing, don't have a remote plan or have a very limited remote plan. And now, all of a sudden, you're having to scale up to 100% remote. On top of that, people were thinking they didn't need their VPN, virtual private network. And then some were thinking, we'll just get rid of it, because what the VPN does is it allows you to encrypt messages, email, all that stuff, sending and receiving. So if you're a large enterprise, like I was when I was working for IBM, you didn't sign on to IBM systems without signing on to the VPN first. And so that is encryption. It's security, you know, with all the cybersecurity attacks, very much needed. I still have a VPN, even, you know, for myself. You know, I went to my local, wherever I have my smartphone service, you know, I said I need a VPN, because it's not safe to be transmitting and sitting in your local coffee shop and getting on their Wi-Fi and thinking that your communication is secure, because it's not.
Right.
So for me, it was just, you know, good practice to have a VPN. So those are the three things I think that are really changing, is how we work, how we educate, how we think about mental health. And then companies actually have to have a strategy. You can't ignore it anymore.
So you mentioned a few things. You mentioned time management, which is super critical, especially given the fact that people with children at home who are now home learning are sharing resources. You also have place management. Not everybody lives in a McMansion. I have mentioned to you, I live in about 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. So we've got time and we've got place. That is a lot of heavy lifting for people who are not used to, like you or I, remote working.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, how do you help somebody scaffold into that, especially when all of a sudden they're learning about WebEx and Skype and Zoom and how to dress the set, so to speak, so that it doesn't look like they've got drying laundry hanging behind them during a session?
I know. Okay, so I have worked remotely about half of my career. And so that means I've worked remotely when I've had been based in the U.S. and I've worked with my peers in the company all over the country. I've worked remotely globally. So I've sat in the U.S. and I've really run the clock. So meaning when I was dealing with Europe, I was, you know, 8 o'clock, that was the first call. So, you know, you had to be at your desk at 8 to get going. And then, you know, by noon, I was done with them. And then by 1 o'clock, you know, noon or 1 o'clock, I was on with the U.S. team. And go till about 5. Then, you know, depending on daylight saving time, sometimes I was 12 hours ahead, they were 12 out, Asia was 12 hours ahead or 14, then I might be on at like 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night talking to Asia. And I did that for literally that global position for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So it didn't allow for a life outside, to think you could do much in the evening. But it also made it challenging, during the day. You knew you had to be somewhere and you had to live by that calendar. So the first thing I'm going to say is nothing gets done without it getting on the calendar. And I literally mean that. Even when I'm out prospecting or networking or sitting down with a client, it's like pull out your calendar, let's get on the calendar. What's your availability?
Right.
And so I've been very structured with having the calendar. And I say that to say, in the remote environment, you don't have time for the casual conversation because we're social distancing. And people, and depending on the size of the company, the bigger the company, the more meetings there are, and the more there you could be double and triple booked. I mean, there were times when I've seen executives sit on two calls because they needed to be on both. And so they're sitting on their cell phone and they're sitting on their phone and they're sitting on their laptop conducting business, right? So your ability to manage your calendar in a remote environment is number one. If you don't master that, you're going to be in trouble. So introduce yourself to your Outlook calendar, your Gmail calendar, whatever that thing is, and get really good at being your own secretary in terms of scheduling. You have to make sure you have availability. There were times I would block off my calendar so I could go heads down. Now, sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't, but you gotta block in time to actually do work. I would say have an accountability partner. Now, this is something that I learned by being in the entrepreneur space, and I think it really works. I have a couple of accountability partners. I don't just sit around with one. I have different ones for different reasons. But what it does is it gives you community. So schedule your accountability partner meeting. So if you're in a work environment and you're working remote, who's the person you work the closest with? Schedule an hour a week, 30 minutes, whatever that thing is, and have a standing meeting that you all commit to making and that everybody works around. That allows you to have community, that allows you to check in to say, how are you? Share tips on how you're surviving, but also it allows you to work on projects and get projects done. I find as an entrepreneur, I need those accountability meetings because I need community at the same time. So it does double duty. But I also say, really work hard at having an established start and end time. So one of the things I do is I have a paper journal, which I use, which has a calendar in it. And I know when I said that to one of my accountability partners, he couldn't believe I had a handwritten journal. And I said, I know it sounds weird in the age of electronics to have one of these, but I'm actually going to tell you, you need to get one because it makes you more efficient. So I'll give you an example. On Sunday afternoons or Sunday evening, I will sit down and map out what my week looks like. So I will take into account what time I'm getting up, what time, is there exercise involved? What time do I expect to get started? What do I want to do first thing in the morning and roll out the rest of the day? When do I have lunch? All that stuff. And I roll that in. And then I kind of figure out when I want to end. Now, am I perfect at adhering to my end date, end time? No. But it at least helps me organize what are the key things I want to get done for the week. The reality is you should have no more than three things on your list to get done for the week, meaning big major projects. You still may have other things that are smaller tasks. Log those as well and just log in the days because some days you're going to have more time. You can play catch up. Other times you may fall behind because, an emergency comes up and you got to deal with it. But your ability to map out, if you're working at home with kids, what time do you want the kids sitting down at the table to start doing their work? When do you want to have lunchtime? When do you want a break to go out in the backyard and run around or go take a walk? When do you want to get back? Who's cooking dinner which night? You and your partner may be trading off so that the other partner can get more work done or get on that 6 o'clock call that they need to get on. But your ability to schedule those things out and to manage yourself to that is going to be huge. And then the last thing I'll say is make sure you have time for lunch. I used to sit at my desk and eat lunch and work all the way through. That got old pretty fast. What I now do, and I live in about 1,200 square space, house as well, I go downstairs to eat. The mere fact of changing perspective and location for 15, 20, 30 minutes, an hour helps tremendously when I come back upstairs and I'm ready to get to work. I've had a chance to stretch, I've had a chance to walk, I've had a chance to maybe talk to, a family member. It's all of those things that you still know that you're human, you need to engage, you just change who you're engaging with for that period of time. And so I think those things have helped me, and I offer that up to others, to say you can survive this and you can actually thrive in this environment because you're able to, you don't have a commute.
I'm going to add another thing. Get out of your jammies and put on work clothes. There's something about wearing the clothing of despair that does not set you up for a good day. Put on the kinds of clothes that you would normally put on if you're going out shopping or being seen by the public. There's something about putting on day clothes that, I don't know if you want to call it armor, but it does set your mind straight. My friend Billy, who we interviewed last week, he makes his bed every day. That's part of his regime. But
That's right.
you have to have, like you say, structure and regime in your life, time management, place management, people management, mental health management, as you mentioned, to make this all work.
And I like your point about getting dressed because I finished up a online program on speaking. And we had to be on Zoom twice a week, visual. So you couldn't sit there with your name up there. It's like, unless your Wi-Fi was not great, but they wanted to see you.
Of course.
And I thought that was really important. I enjoyed it because, yes, I get dressed and I kind of wear casual clothes. But if I were to get online with a client, I would be a little bit more dressed or a little bit more polished. And I think that's important because you can get too comfortable and disrespect your role and your job and yourself if you don't take this seriously.
Indeed. Say, Carla, I want to pivot. No pun intended. No pun intended. So, Pivoting Strategies, your company, which you founded and you are the CEO of, I describe as being on the nexus of data analysis and compelling storytelling. So the idea behind that is your clients gather a lot of data, which you help to turn into actionable information. But you don't stop there. You actually help people to craft stories about the brand and the enterprise and how that brand benefits and relates to people. So with that in mind, I wanted to ask you to talk about the relationship between data and storytelling now that we are all sheltered in place at home and social distancing from others. How's it all changing? What things do you think are going to become permanent and perhaps even better than we had before COVID-19 descended upon us?
Oh, I think there's a lot. So the way I look at data is in a couple different ways. I think we spend a lot of time in industry talking about KPIs, key performance indicators. We spend a lot of time looking at our lagging indicators like return on investment, like cost of acquisition or click-through rates, right?
Yeah.
Those give us a window into the past performance, and that's what we are constantly measuring ourselves against. Then we look at the second type of indicator, which is current indicators. So that might be, well, what's the cash flow that we're generating from certain products or a product launch as of a specific date, like it might be today or whatever. And so, it might be also how many people do we have registered for an event today, if we're looking at registration numbers. Those give us a window into what's going on today and what's that story. The third indicator I think that folks do not spend enough time looking at, putting on their plate, and making a conscious effort in their cadence meetings to sit there and really think about and grapple with are what I call leading indicators. And what are leading indicators? Well, they're really, first of all, they're not KPIs. They're not key performance indicators. Instead, they're what I call stories. So they give you a window into the future. And they're not things that you think would go together. They're not a story all put together It's a lot of different things or different activities, trends. They're not facts yet. They could be conjecture with what these indicators look like. But at the end of the day, they come together, and depending on how you look at them, could begin to tell you a story about something that is considered an inflection point. An inflection point is something that can have a seismic impact, what we call a 10x impact, on the business model as you know it today. When we sit back and look at what we're dealing with COVID-19, I would say we are at an inflection point right now. So when we look at those leading indicators, if we just take this COVID-19 and say, how could we have spotted this or at least begun to think about it as a business and had a remote plan in place? Or if we are thinking about delivery services, how could we have known that this was going to be a big deal? And sometimes those leading indicators show up as stories. But I'll give you an example of some leading indicators that were out there. So for the past, what, 15 years, we've had the technology, or the technology has developed enough to allow us to work from home. And it's built up enough of an ecosystem. So think about this. Zoom, which everybody is using right now, was established in 2011. WebEx, 1995. WebEx is what a lot of corporations use. A lot of smaller organizations will use Zoom. And then if you think about Skype, it was developed in 2003. All right? So that part of the ecosystem has been there since at least 1995. And it's been constantly improving. Price has come down, availability and access has come down, it has spread across the country. Two, think about the fact that 96%, according to Pew Research, 96% of Americans have a smartphone. Then think about the fact that between 2000 and 2015, we've had a series of epidemics and pandemics around the world. So we had SARS, which was in 2002 to 2003, H1N1, which was the 2009 flu pandemic, and MERS 2012 through 2015 in multiple iterations. This COVID-19, it's just a continuation of what we've been experiencing out in the world for the past 20 years. And then think about the fact that the home delivery strategy for restaurants, which we now see a ton of restaurants that refuse to do home delivery or didn't want to get on the app, are now jumping on. But think about the companies that were established. Grubhub, established 2004, and it's the largest in the country. DoorDash, established 2013. Postmates, established 2011. Uber Eats, established 2014. So we've had some type of delivery service available for the past 16 years. So that infrastructure has developed and it's there. Two other things I want to highlight. Online education with Coursera, Udemy, Khan Academy, General Assembly, K-12, it's been around for years. Even your universities, if they've done executive education programming to make more money for the university, it's been there. Blackboard's been around for what, at least 10, 15 years? And then think about this. This is what I thought was really interesting. We're now dealing with hospitals having made the transition to electronic records and making the transition to electronic prescriptions. Well, guess what? Telehealth and telemedicine have at least been around since 1879 for telehealth, when the Lancet Journal suggested using the telephone instead of office visits to help to serve patients. And telemedicine's been around at least since 1906 as a concept. So different pieces of this infrastructure were already there. It wasn't until COVID pushed us to work remotely that we're now leveraging all of these components. And that's huge. So as leading indicators, all this stuff was there for us to look at. The challenge was, how did we as companies, as businesses, as organizations think about it and embrace it? So going back to that Gartner example, think about the fact that two-thirds of companies did not embrace this technology. And now we are, because we're pushed into it. And that's what I feel like leading indicators create for us, is this opportunity to think about our business and in what trends are there. But inflection points are what force us to change the way our business model works. And that's what's happening right now. We're having 2 weeks of panic, fear, and whatnot. But in another week or two, people are going to settle into a new routine.
That's the interesting thing about this. We're never going back. And to me, that's a plus. Mm-hmm. It's scary, mm-hmm. but a lot of things are going to change. Carla, I really appreciate the time with you today. One last question. You write an amazing blog called The New CEO. How mm-hmm. would somebody discover that, and where would you point them on social media to find you?
Well, I would point them to follow me on LinkedIn, because that's usually where I'm most active. You can look up Carla Fleming, or you can look up the company page, Pivoting Strategies. For Twitter, I'm at Pivoting, and it's the word pivoting, and then Strategies is spelled Stratgs. Facebook and Instagram, it's spelled out as Pivoting Strategies.
Well, thank you so much for being on. We'll get you back on to reflect more on the future of work. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Links to Pivoting Strategies social media and to the past episode featuring Carla Fleming are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us wherever you get podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work, for the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.